We may be singing that 3 weeks from tonight. Oh, welcome back, everybody. Starting this hour with, kind of a little ride in the storm out. Just feeling a little REO tonight here on At Your Service. Dave Simon's filling in tonight. Certified financial planner and founder, managing partner of our new privately held company known as One Private Wealth. For those of you who occasionally have heard me over the many years, you've always heard me talk about how I worked at a larger, well-known firm or bank as a financial advisor, a certified financial planner, a fiduciary. But after a little bit more than 30 years of doing that, I sort of had a choice to make here in my early 60s. I could either start to kind of think about my retirement path and my route that I could start to go off, or I could say, you know what, I've kind of always wanted to live this dream of owning my own business. I've had always that entrepreneurial spirit. Now, this route didn't really exist when I first got into the business. It really didn't. But slowly over the years, the playing surface has leveled out. All the power that was always concentrated on Wall Street or the big banks and brokerage firms has kind of crumbled down for a variety of reasons, rules and regulations, the internet, all that stuff. And so it's much more democratic in the industry. And now you have many more people like me who have decided that they're going to take ownership of their business. It's no different than anyone, let's say, who's a lawyer or an accountant or a physician or a counselor might initially work for a large firm, maybe even go to another large firm after that as they start to learn what their specialty is and they're recruited by other firms or whatever. But at some point they say, no, I could have more freedom and flexibility if I just open my own little firm, my own little company. And I have my own law practice. I have my own counseling practice. That's always been out there, but not so much in my industry into the last decade or so, and certainly in recent years. So we're thrilled. If you want to learn a little bit more, find out more about what I'm talking about, it's a pretty simple website to remember, as opposed to former websites that have to have all these slashes and dots and periods, and it's just crazy. But now it's just one PWM. That's it. One spelled out, O-N-E. PWM is the acronym for Private Wealth Management. So onepwm.com, and you'll find out a little bit more. And that's it. The only commercial you hear. All right. So I started off the show about an hour ago talking about the fact that, yes, 3 weeks from today is the big election. It's finally here. I want to speed up to it. Let's get this thing going. My own opinion, we won't know the next day, maybe the next day after that and the next week. This could be tied up in court systems, whatever. I don't think the financial markets necessarily will crash and burn. There's no history of that. Even back in 2000, when we didn't have a declared winner for 5 weeks, the market only fell just a little bit. And so markets, we know, don't like uncertainty. So I can tell you that even it's not like we're going to just resume the bull market if something gets tied up in the court system for some time or worse. But don't believe the hype, the negative rhetoric that somehow if that person wins, the market's going to crash and burn. I've heard that my whole career, by the way, but it's really been ramped up in the more recent elections. When in 2016, the liberal economist Paul Krugman of the New York Times said, if that guy Donald Trump wins, the market's crashing. I hope you know that. And not just that, we'll go into a deep, deep recession. And the opposite was true. Market pretty much went straight up. 2018, we were kind of flat. And then it was right back up 19 until COVID and the economic lockdown and pandemic and all that hit. Well, the same thing in reverse happened. A lot of your conservative commentators said, if that liberal progressive Joe Biden wins, I don't want to see what the country's going to look like 4 years from now. And specifically, I'm talking about the financial markets and Wall Street. Market's going to crash if that guy wins. And yet, pretty much from the beginning, it went up. And yes, we did have the bear market in 22, but about 3 out of 4 years, the market was higher. Markets, let me let you in on a secret. The markets don't care as much as you do about who's sitting in the White House. I know You may not like to hear it, but those are the facts. If the market cares about what's going on politically, it's the makeup of Congress. Put your attention there. I know all of the headlines are going to be Trump versus Harris. But what Wall Street is going to be focusing on is who controls the Senate? What party? Who controls the U.S. House of Representatives? What party? And how close is it? And how does that compare to the party in the White House? Is it a Republican or is it a Democrat? That's the thing that we have to keep in mind. Either side, Republican or Democrat, we do not want one party controlling everything. And I know some of you will go, what do you mean? You want that other party? Yeah, if you have a 401k or you have any kind of retirement planning, that's just history. And it's on both sides. The best performing markets historically, and it's not even close, is when there's shared power in D.C. That's just the fact. When one party controls everything, their returns are less than historically average. So when I am watching the election results 3 weeks from now, first of all, we're going to know the makeup of the Senate and the House probably before we're going to know who wins the White House, most likely. And at this point, if we can believe any of the polling, and it seems pretty consistent, whether it's a Republican pollster or a Democrat pollster, there seems to be some consistency this time. But it looks like there is going to be shared power between the Senate and the House, two different parties. So at that point, it's almost like Wall Street won't care. Now, let me be very clear, because some of you are going to say, well, wait a minute, that person wants to do X, Y, Z, and that's going to hurt the economy. You may be right, but that's not what the market's going to respond to the very next day. It will look at the makeup of Congress and say, but that person probably won't get his or her entire legislative proposals passed because they won't get it passed by that chamber. So keep that in mind. All right. So let's not get too worked up about the results that come in those early hours. Let me kind of shift gears here a little bit. We're going to have some fun. You know, I think we're going to lighten the mood. It's been sort of a heavy at your service tonight. We're going to lighten the mood and look at the markets in a different way, because I'm going to try to prove to you, even if I gave you in advance all the news events that were about to happen, even if I gave you in advance what the inflation rate's going to be next year, what unemployment's going to look like, who's going to win the election in 3 weeks, who's going to control Congress, I'm going to even get into geopolitics from around the world. And I'm going to give you a lot of economic data, and I'm telling you, you still will not be able to guess the direction of the market. And I'm not even saying try to guess if the market was up 8.3% or down 2. No, I'm going to make it easy for you. It's almost like heads or tails. You only have to say market's up or down, and you still will not get it consistently right. I have proof of that, one personally, and one from a recent study that's very fascinating. So come back. We'll dig into that next on More at Your Service. Stay with us. Lady beside me, she's there to guide me. She says that alone we finally found home. All right, my friends, welcome back. 920 in St. Louis. This is At Your Service here on Camo X. Dave Simons filling in tonight. So back in the day that I used to host investment seminars, and I haven't done one in probably 10 years, but I used to love doing them back in the 90s and through the 2000s. And some of you listening right now probably went to one or more. And you'll recall that a lot of times I would start off the seminar with a little game to prove a point. And I would hand out a piece of paper to everybody in attendance. And we used to do these at the Ritz-Carlton, and they have a really nice seminar conference room that seats 100 people. And we would do two of those on a Saturday morning. We would do a 9 a.m. and an 11 a.m., and they were both filled. So we would get something like 200 people on a Saturday morning who would play this game. Now, that number is important for a reason that you'll see here in a second. So we would pass out this piece of paper, and it would just list four consecutive calendar years. 1971, 72, 73, 74, 75. And next to it, you were either going to put an arrow up or an arrow down. And what I would do is I would say, okay, folks, we're going to look at the major headlines that occurred in that calendar year. Now, I was not purposely trying to trick anybody to try to make sure nobody got these things right. I really drew out the big headlines and news-making events of every year. And I would give these bullet points and I would say, okay, this is the year that inflation was this way and the Fed had to get involved and they raised rates this much. Here's what the unemployment rate was. Oh, by the way, this was the election year. It was 1972, and this is what happened, and this is what was going on in Vietnam, and this was what, and here's some other big news events. And then I would say right there, and I would say, okay, that year, right now, everybody, put an arrow up or arrow down. What did you think the stock market, the U.S. stock market as measured by the Dow Jones Industrial Average did that year? Okay, then we go to the next year. We did that five times for 5 years. And I pretty much have to tell everyone, okay, you're on the honor system here, all right? Show of hands, how many of you got all five correct? Now, this was pretty much before the day that anyone was bringing in their laptops and you'd have immediate access to the internet. Of course, the internet existed for most of that time, but you would have to, you know, you'd have the old dial-up stuff and nobody was doing that. And what's the internet code here at the Ritz? Now, so nobody even had that. And for much of this time, we didn't even have smartphones. So there was no way to cheat. You really had to listen to the information I gave you, use your own personal memory of those years, depending on how old you were, and then come up with it. And I'm telling you, almost never, 200 people, would anybody get 5 out of 5. You would occasionally get someone raise their hand. I'm like, really? Did you? Yeah, I did. And you know that's luck, right? Yeah, I know. It's luck. And then I'd say, okay, show of hands, how many got 4 out of 5? Well, okay, then you'd get a few. The vast majority, 2 or 3. Even when I hand-fed the information, even when some people, if they were old enough, could use their own personal experience, still couldn't get it right. And not even a majority of them right. Well, there's another little game that's being played by a financial firm. I don't even know where they are. They're called Elm Wealth. They're not here in St. Louis, but I was reading this in the Wall Street Journal. And they take what I did and they extrapolate it. I mean, this is my game on steroids here because they have thousands of people that they surveyed on this. And here's what they did. I love this. So the players are given $1 million, of course, in play money, all right? And they are shown dozens of journal front page stories over a course of years. And they're randomly selected over a course of years. And it's the same thing. But here in this case, you don't just say up or down. You get to invest the $1 million. So if they show you, okay, 1975, this is what was going on, and they give you the economic stuff, and inflation's running there, and you're thinking, oh, I even remember those days. I think gas prices, they were going up, right? That was inflation. We had OPEC that was controlling everything. I bet if I bought old Texaco stock or Shell stock, I bet you I would have made a ton of money. So I'm going to take $100,000 of my million, and I'm going to invest it in Shell and Texaco. That's how this game was allowed to be played. But wait, there's more. You are allowed to leverage. You could margin. So even though you were given $1 million in play money, you might say, you know what? I'm going to actually invest $1.2 million because I get to margin this. That was part of the game. At the end of it all, they went through 15 rounds of this. There were over 8,000 mostly financially savvy players and participants. They took a crack at this game over a period of time. The median ending wealth after 15 rounds, remember they started with a million. Was it 1.5 million? Was it two? I mean, what, 1.1? I mean, what kind of money? No. No, it was 687,986. More than a 32% average loss. Even when they weren't just told the news like I did, they were shown the news with Wall Street Journal articles and headlines. And they still couldn't get it right. In fact, as it says here, many of the participants lost everything. How in the world is that? Can that happen? Take it from somebody who's been in the business long enough to know. Having information fed to you of what's about to happen is still not helpful. Mr. Market has a mind of its own, his own. You have no idea. This is why, and I really harp on this, at the end of every calendar year and at the beginning of the next calendar year, I always tell people, do not listen to the annual prognosticators who are predicting what the market is going to do this year. They don't have a clue. These are intelligent people, by the way, and they know more about the markets than you will ever know. They know the intricacies of it. They also have to know it's a fool's game in what they're doing, but they're paid very well because they do have certain insights. Now, I read these people. I read their research. I find a lot of the stuff that they have to say insightful when they talk about, oh, these consumer product stocks, we really like this, and here's why. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, and by the way, emerging markets might do well, and here's why. Oh, okay, that's very interesting. I'm talking about when they say, and we think the S&P will finish at 6350 this year, which is a 12% gain. You have zero clue. You know what it reminds me of? Just because you're more knowledgeable at the financial markets, you are no better than the guy who knows practically nothing about investing when it comes to predicting what the market's going to do next year. The best analogy I can give you is, how many of you have participated in these NCAA brackets every March, March Madness? Most of us have done that. If you work in an office or you're part of a group or whatever that's large enough, is it the guy who really knows the most about college basketball who consistently wins? No, it's not. Typically, you know a little bit about something, but every once in a while, it's somebody who knows absolutely nothing, and they voted because of the team names. I just wanted to vote for any team that had a cat in it. Well, how did they win? Because it's pure luck. There's some of you may know the name Jay Billis. He's one of the great college basketball minds. He's on ESPN. He does commentating, and he played ball, and he knows his stuff. And he always posts, like a lot of these guys on ESPN, they will post their bracket. Don't follow it. They are no better than you. Jay Billis, the reason I bring him out is, was it a year or two ago, Arizona lost in the first round. Maybe it was this year. I can't remember. The last couple of years. But they were like one of the Final Four favorites. And they got upset in the first round. Jay Billis had picked Arizona to win it all. He was already out. And I'm thinking, this is a perfect analogy for people who think they can also pick the stock market because they follow the market. Don't listen to people who do. I've never done this. I've hosted Dollars and Cents shows since 1996. Never once have I ever said to anybody on the show, hey, I think the market's probably going to go up about 12% this year or 4%. If I'm right, it's because it was pure dumb luck, no skill. Investing is not a game. This is not March Madness. Investing is not something that you need to guess at. Investing can be volatile day to day. You don't have a clue, even if you are given information beforehand. What you have to do instead is figure out, what do you want to do with your money long term? How do you want it to behave? And most importantly, and this is very subjective and there's not a right or wrong answer, but what is your risk tolerance? What are you willing, how much are you willing to see your investments decline in any particular year or 2 years or 3 years? Look at history. If you do it yourself, you're going to have to do research on that, what you're comfortable with. If you work an advisor, that's something that needs to be discussed. And then come up with a plan that you can adjust on the fly when things inevitably change, but you've got to focus long term. And let's, as we start to end the calendar year, you're going to start to hear predictions. I think the market's going to be up again next year, the third year in a row. They might be right, but not because they know. It's because they got it right out of pure luck. We'll be right back. All right, my friends, welcome back. 9:36 in St. Louis. Dave Simons here. Hello there. So we're going to bring some politics back into this. The main discussion here in the second hour is about investing. And I, you know, rightfully so, a lot of you do look at the election coming up and you're worried about what may or may not happen to your investments, right? I understand that. I've said that the election itself will not be as impactful on what the market will do as you might think. That's just the history of it, and I use some examples. Market cares more about the entire makeup of Congress as it relates to who's in the White House, and that's what I'll be focusing on. Where the markets will eventually go is, okay, now that we know who's in the White House, now we know what party kind of controls what, okay, what's going to get done? What are the proposals that that person has been campaigning on? Can these things even come to fruition? I will tell you right now that economists on both sides, some economists, I think most of them say that they're nonpartisan, but you can just tell in some of the research that I read, okay, you're kind of leaning in that direction. You know, just come clean. Let me know. I'll still read your stuff. But don't try to hide behind one kind of ideology. You can, if you've been at it long enough, you can kind of tell. Here's one thing that I've picked up on this year. Both sides admit that every side, whether you're Donald Trump or Kamala Harris, what you want is going to be very inflationary. If they get everything they want. People who are economists who are on the left will say, yeah, Donald Trump stuff with all of his tariffs, very inflationary. Yeah, but what about Kamala Harris? A little bit of inflationary. There's almost like grudgingly admit it. And then same on the other side. Oh, Donald or Kamala Harris, what she's wanting to do? Just look out. I mean, the deficit is going to soar. Yeah, but Donald Trump was. Yeah, okay, yeah, I know that's kind of inflationary too. I've never seen anything like this. I really haven't. So economists are saying inflation and the deficits are going to be higher under both. Now, what I've noticed is that the numbers tend to be a little bit higher under Donald Trump for one reason and one reason only, and that is because of these huge tariffs that he talks about. You know, 50% here, 100% here. Let me tell you something. This isn't taking sides one way or the other. If you follow politics very, very closely, do you think Donald Trump uses hyperbole a little bit? It's not a trick question. The answer is yes. You never know when words come out of the man's mouth if he is dead serious or something just came to his mind and it just kind of bump came out, and whether he really means it or not. He even admitted it. Trump supporters, don't get mad at me because I'm about to prove my point here in something that he said. So he's been quoted, of course, and we've got the public statements of how much that he would like some of these tariffs to be. And by the way, I get it. We need a more even playing field. We are taken advantage by a lot of our trading partners. We just kind of let it happen. So maybe there needs to be a little bit more of a comeuppance. But there's no question, you start slapping 50% tariffs across the board. First of all, that's never going to pass through Congress. It just won't. You could do some of that unilaterally as the president through executive order, but not across the board like that. So I don't think most economists and most market watchers really believe that we're going to get that. All the studies and research that I've seen, they'll say, well, if you had 50% tariffs, the deficit will be X and inflation will be X plus Y. And okay, that might be true, but it's not ever going to come to fruition. Well, Donald Trump was on Fox News yesterday, and he was asked about that. because he was actually quoted a couple of days before saying that he would actually approve tariffs in some industries of 200%. And so he was asked about that. And here it is. It says, Trump has suggested at several rallies and public appearances that he would impose a 200% tariff on some imported goods. Now, when he was asked about it on Fox News, he said, no, they're just kind of theoretical. And here's his exact quote. I'm using 200% tariffs just as a figure of speech. We'll say 100, 200, I'll say 500, I don't care. So if you have followed Donald Trump even before he got into politics, if you've read any of his book, The Art of the Deal, if you know how he does things in the rough and tumble world of New York real estate, you know that he's one of those guys who will start off way on the extreme during negotiations, knowing that he'll never get that. But if he only gets half of what he said, which was an extreme position to begin with, he's going to make the other side feel like they did a great job because they got Donald Trump to come way back. But he started so extreme. That's just how he's done business. And so he brings that to his politics. This is not a pro or anti anything. I'm just telling you, this is the way the man does business. And so I've never worried about the fact that he actually wants 200% tariffs, 100%. I don't know that he'll get anything if he does win the White House. So my whole point on this is don't get caught up about what may happen in the financial markets right away. The market's going to take its time here to see how the political landscape might shift and change, and then get into the year and what's possible and what's not, and then how things shake out. The market really could have a rough 2025. It could, or it could have another strong year like the last two. We shall see. All right. So the other thing that I was going to get to, because where is it? Because this is on. Yeah, it's on. So let's go to the Harris side. I just talked about Trump and the tariffs. The other thing that economists are all saying you can't do it, and that is her proposal to tax unrealized capital gains for the wealthiest of the wealthy, those who have a net worth of $100 million or more. And to say, if you've got $100 million in investments and it's a really good year, and at the end of the year, your portfolio is valued at $110 million, but you haven't sold anything. This is just in real estate. It's in stocks. It's in bonds, commodities, whatever. But you've made $10 million. Now, as long as you didn't sell anything under current law, you don't owe any taxes, any capital gains on that. What Kamala Harris has said is, if you've got that kind of money, and you never sell anything and you die and then it just passes on tax-free, well, estate planning, you might still have to pay some estate tax unless it's going to a spouse. But while you're alive, Harris says we need to tax that. So that 10% that you just made, that $10 million, we're going to put a 25% tax on that. So you owe the government $2.5 million. There is no way, something like that is ever going to pass Congress. It's not going to happen. It's a completely unworkable plan. You cannot have people who don't, let's say, have a lot of liquidity, who might be wealthy among wealthy upon wealthy, and have $100 million, which is kind of a lot of money. But they would have to typically sell stuff off to raise the $2.5 million. You might be surprised, folks. You think a $100 million person might just have $20 million sitting in the money market at Commerce Bank? They don't. A lot of that's invested. A lot of it's in illiquid investments. And so you have this cascading effect of selling something off and creating more of a mess. This is people who would espouse this, number one, have some kind of wealth envy, or number two, they really don't understand how the free market economic system works. I don't think that's going to see the light of day. I don't think 50 to 100% tariffs is going to see the light of day, even if the people espousing those win. So the market will focus on economic policy up to a certain degree. But you know, and I'll leave you with this before our last break here, what the market always, always, always ultimately gets to is earnings. That's what it is. The stock market is a market of, come on, class, stocks. What are stocks? Publicly traded companies. You have shares. It's based on the health of that particular company. And if earnings are growing and the economy is doing well enough because of or in spite of economic policy, that will drive the market, not the person sitting in the White House. We'll be back. Oh, man, as always, 2 hours. Wow, goes by very, very quickly. 10 minutes before the hour, but it's been great visiting with all of you. I love getting the chance to do these fill-ins. Don't know when I'll be on next, but I have a feeling if it's anything like the last couple of the off-season in baseball, that about every other week or so, I'll make an appearance. So thank you for indulging me these last couple of hours. I want to leave you with this because it's a very common question in the field of finance and investing, and that is, Dave, what do you think about gold? Oh my gosh, is there so much misleading information? Again, people trying to sell you something. Dollar's going to crash. There's the digital dollar. We get into all kinds of conspiracies. Stop the madness. The dollar is going to remain the reserve currency. China's not going to purposely try to crash the dollar and take over, because it would also crash their economy in ways you can't even comprehend. The dollar is going to remain the world's reserve currency, all right? Now, let's go to the gold thing as a pure investment. In full disclosure, I've owned some gold for a long, long time. It is not a major portion or part of my overall portfolio. I just have it as that insurance. It's a small amount. It, has it done as well as my stock portfolio over time? No, but that's where people make mistakes. They look at an investment like gold as something that's got to perform. It's got to give me a return. That's not how you look at gold. If you do, you will be disappointed most of the time, because historically, the stock market has done better. In fact, much better than gold. You have gold in there to just kind of level out some of the volatility. Typically, when the stock market is in turmoil, gold can do better. Normally does better. No guarantee of that, but normally it does better. That's why I have these non-correlated investments. And typically, if you get into a high inflation period, gold also does much better as well. Although this was a little different in the most recent batch of inflation. Gold didn't start off doing so well when inflation was jumping up to 9%, and it confused a lot of economists. Well, lately, it has actually outperformed the market. Year to date through today, the price of gold is up over 24%. That's beating the S&P 500. But I just don't look at it necessarily that way. There are other longer periods. Let me give you an example. I wrote something down here. Find it. Oh, so anyone can play games with dates. I can show you that gold has outperformed the S&P 500 over a predetermined date if I pick the right spot. I can also do the opposite. I can say, well, actually, the stock market has done so much better than gold if I pick, let's say, a bear market low. So let's start with the latter there. Remember the Great Recession, the Great Financial Crisis? Of course you do. 2008 actually started in late 07, went into 09. So I took in kind of near the low of at the end of the year of 2008 for both gold and the S&P 500 for the U.S. stock market. From December 31st of 08 through today, so this is up to date, you're talking almost 16 years. Gold has actually done okay, 6.9% annually for close to 16 years. Would you sign up for something if you knew you were going to get about 7% a year for the next 16 years? I think most of us would say, oh man, you get me that? I'm happy as a clam. I'll do that all day. Well, during that same time frame, December of 08 through today, the U.S. stock market, as measured by the S&P 500, has averaged 13.4%. Versus 6.9. And oh, by the way, the 13.4 is without dividends. we've got to add another 1.5, 2, 2.25% to that. So really, if we added dividends into the mix and you reinvested those dividends, you're talking 15-16%, more than double gold. See how this game is played? Because then I can go back and pick another date and say, well, year to date, or the last 12 months, let's do that. If I sold a gold newsletter, I'm certainly not going to tell you from late 08. That doesn't help me. But if I say, hey, last 12 months, gold is up 30.5%. Let me repeat that. 30.5%. Year to date, it's up 24%. S&P 500 is up not even 20%. Certainly not up 30 in the last 12 months. Don't buy gold for an investment. Buy gold as an alternative. That's all. I've owned it. I don't even know how long. It's been decades, I guess. And I've not really added to it, I don't think. Maybe I added to it back in 2011, because I know I've also taken a little off the table here and there. If you look at gold the right way and know why you own it and have reasonable expectations and don't expect it to be your top performer long term, then yeah, knock yourself out. This is not a recommendation. You have to talk to your own financial advisor or do your own research on it. But basic answer to the question, should I own gold? If you don't mind something that acts as more of an alternative investment and smooths out the wild ride, absolutely. Folks, it's been great visiting with you the last couple of hours. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk soon.